We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And away we go, episode 152 of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is Friday, September 24th, 2021. What is a football Friday? On the show, big game this Sunday afternoon for the Washington football team at the Buffalo Bills at 1. Ron Rivera on Tuesday called this a measuring stick game for Washington. How is our team going to measure up? You know, my four-year-old son in his bedroom has one of those things on the wall that measure your height. You know, you stand with your back up against the thing. Well, he got mad recently that he isn't yet 4 feet tall. Is the 2021 Washington football team going to measure up to being 4 feet tall come Sunday at the Bills? Where will the measurement of the 2021 Washington football team ultimately be at with this measuring stick game? I don't know, but I cannot wait to find out. Hello and welcome. It is Friday. That's always a good thing. And it is a football Friday. That's an even better thing. In-depth preview of Washington's game at the Bills begins next segment, during which I'll be talking Washington's defense, Taylor Heinicke, and much more off comments from Ron Rivera at his post-practice press conference on Thursday. I have a special guest for you, Bills insider Matt Perino of Syracuse.com, co-host of Shout, the Buffalo football podcast. He'll tell us all we need know about the Bills. He'll give you your opposition research. And I will give you my rhyming keys, my keys for a Washington win at the Bills in rhyming fashion. Juan Soto, another monster game on Thursday night in a 3-2 Nationals win at the Cincinnati Reds. This guy is hitting out of his mind right now. I'll talk Nats in a bit. I will do Goldilocks, my weekly college football picks against the spreads for our major area teams. I'll give you picks for games this weekend involving Maryland, Virginia, and Navy. I have a Capitals segment for you. Yes, a Capitals segment, as Caps training camp started on Thursday. I'm not kidding people when I tell you this is the number one DC sports podcast or show. Big Caps news on Thursday regarding Nicklas Backstrom, and good stuff on Thursday from Evgeny Kuznetsov. I have Kuzi audio that you have to hear. What kind of a season are we in store for from old Kuzi? It better be a good season. And I'll hit on the Orioles late in the show. They on Thursday night actually won in shutout fashion for a second time in four games. 3-0 the final over the Texas Rangers at Oriole Park at Camden Yards as Austin Hayes and Ryan Mountcastle delivered again. A friendly reminder, when you have 30 seconds to kill, especially if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please give this podcast a 5-star rating if you haven't yet done that. And please write just like a 1 or 2 sentence review saying how much you like the podcast if you haven't yet done that. Those things help out a lot. You can hit pause on your iPhone or iPad right now and do those things. And I thank you for doing those things. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi Podcast at yahoo.com. Email from Kyle McGonigal on the Washington football team off something that I talked about on Wednesday's show episode 150, writes Kyle, good show about the WFT rebuild compared to the Bills. Of course, you hit on the head when you said the primary difference between the WFT rebuild and that of the Bills is that the Bills drafted a franchise quarterback in Josh Allen with a top 10 pick in the draft. To the extent the WFT was ever in a rebuild, it ended when Rivera inserted the aged veteran Alex Smith, who had just enough in his one good leg to win the absolutely awful NFC East. By doing so, the team lost its chance to select a franchise quarterback in the top 10, like the Bills did with Allen. Rivera doubled down this offseason by signing 38-year-old Ryan Fitzpatrick as the starter. Ironically, the only potential value in playing Smith last year and making the playoffs is that Washington may have discovered Taylor Heinicke in the process. Of course, the only reason Heinicke ever got a chance to play last year in the playoff game and now this year is that the aged veterans Smith and Fitzpatrick both got injured. These injuries may have saved Ron from himself, as the team is now forced to do what it should have done last year: find out what it has in Heinicke or Kyle Allen or anyone else the team thinks can play and is not almost 40 years old. If Heinicke can be our long-term answer at quarterback, the problem is solved and the debate is over. However, if Heinicke proves incapable of being the guy, either due to injury or ineffectiveness, not sticking with the rebuild may prove to be a huge mistake. At the very least, we will have lost a year in potentially acquiring a franchise quarterback. Heinicke getting this opportunity to start, hopefully for the rest of the season, is actually the best thing for the franchise. Should have happened last year. Either Heinicke looks like the man, in which case we have a starting quarterback, or he doesn't, in which case we may be in a position to draft a quarterback, or we realize we need to more aggressively pursue one. Good email, Kyle. So a few things. Washington, and I know, Kyle, you know this, but didn't sign Heinicke until last December. So Heinicke being the starting quarterback last year wasn't an option, unless you believe that Washington should have signed Heinicke earlier in the season or prior to the season. But, I mean, nobody was advocating for that. I do agree with you that the situation now is quite good in that if Heinicke can stay healthy, we're going to get a good look at him, a thorough evaluation of him, and obtain a sense of whether there really is something with this guy. I think that there may well be something with this guy. I know I want to see more. I like a lot about Taylor Heinicke. As far as the rebuild, I actually think that Washington is still rebuilding. And I guess it depends on your definition of rebuilding. But Washington, to me, is just rebuilding while also trying to win. So yes, the team this past offseason did acquire veterans like Ryan Fitzpatrick and Charles Leno Jr. But A, some of that had to do with what else was available, i.e. Ron Rivera didn't love, say, Justin Fields or Mac Jones. And so Ron decided, I'm going to sign a Fitzpatrick as opposed to trying to get someone like a Fields or a Jones who I don't really believe in. We'll see if Ron is proven right on that. And B, these guys, talking about Fitzpatrick and Leno, are guys on short-term deals. You know, these are stopgap signings. These are not like long-term big money commitments. Washington is still a pretty young team. Washington has not made some big trade in which the team dealt away a bunch of draft picks. And Washington is set up beautifully from a salary cap standpoint for years to come. And by the way, the cap situation can get even better this coming offseason because A, the cap is expected to go up big time. And B, Washington can cut Landon Collins this offseason and not incur some insane dead money hit. It's tricky in the NFL, but you can rebuild and win at the same time. It's not easy, but it is possible. And Washington is trying to walk that line right now. Well, don't ever walk the line that is not taking care of yourself. Your health matters. And if you have questions or concerns regarding your skin health, contact Dr. George Verghese and the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. Dr. Verghese is a board-certified dermatologist and Mohs surgeon. He is one of the nation's premier dermatologists. He's a big Washington football team fan and a big listener of this podcast. And operating under the direction of Dr. Verghese is the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland. The Institute focuses on medical skincare, cosmetic procedures, and skin cancer diagnosis and comprehensive care. And specific to skin cancer treatment, the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland offers something very special and cutting-edge, superficial radiation therapy, or SRT. SRT is an alternative to surgical procedures for basal cell and squamous cell skin cancers. SRT is revolutionary. It's a non-surgical skin cancer treatment that's safe and effective. You see, having skin cancer doesn't mean having to have surgery and the downtime and side effects that go with surgery. You have options. Understand that a non-surgical option in SRT is available. Dr. George Verghese in the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland offer SRT, unlike many other dermatology practices in the area, and SRT is covered by most insurances. To find out more, call 301-396-3401. Make sure that you tell them that Al Galdi sent you. That phone number again, 301-396-3401, or visit midatlanticskin.com. That's midatlanticskin.com. Dr. George Verghese in the Mid-Atlantic Skin Surgery Institute of Maryland, nationally recognized for treating skin cancer across the Mid-Atlantic region. All right, the 1-1 Washington football team is at the 1-1 Buffalo Bills Sunday afternoon at 1. Next segment is our special guest, Bills insider Matt Perino of Syracuse.com, co-host of Shout, the Buffalo football podcast. And then after my conversation with Matt, I'll give you my rhyming keys for a Washington win at Buffalo, followed by my prediction for the game. Right now, let's get into a few things with the game. So this game is an opportunity for Washington. The game is a chance to pull off a big upset from a point spread standpoint, although the line for the game has come down. More on that when I give you my prediction for the game. The game is a chance for Washington to win what Ron Rivera on Tuesday called a measuring stick game. The game is a chance for Washington to begin a season 2-1. Washington has started a season 2-1 or better just 3 times over the last 12 seasons, talking about 2009 through 2020. We are not used to fast starts in these parts. Washington would be off to a fast start, relatively speaking, right? 2-1 with a win at the Bills on Sunday. What's especially interesting about this game is that it features a battle of two very disappointing units so far this season. Washington's defense versus Buffalo's offense. Both Washington's defense and Buffalo's offense have been disappointments so far this season. Washington through week 2 was just 18th in the NFL in total defense per Football Outsiders DVOA metric. Buffalo through week 2 was just 26th in the NFL in total offense per DVOA. Which disappointment will be the least disappointing come Sunday? Which unit has the better chance of getting right on Sunday? Washington cannot get worked by Josh Allen the way that Washington got worked by Justin Herbert in the 2016 loss to the Los Angeles Chargers at FedEx Field in week 1, and the way that Washington got worked by Daniel Jones in the 30-29 win over the New York Giants at FedEx Field in week 2. Josh Allen through week 2 was just 23rd out of 32 qualified quarterbacks in the NFL in ESPN's total QBR at 44.6. One spot ahead of him, Taylor Heinicke at 45.6. Allen finished last regular season 3rd among all qualified quarterbacks in the NFL in total QBR at 76.6. Ron Rivera at his post-practice press conference on Thursday on what concerns him about Josh Allen.
Well, I think his ability to run is obviously something that we've got to be disciplined about. You know, we saw it last week with Daniel Jones. So the emphasis has been on that, making sure we're prepared for it, make sure we understand what our role is and how we fit that role. I think that's one of the things that we've got to be really sharp with. I think his ability to throw, especially throw the deep ball, you know, the hard play action they give you, he's really good at the play fakes, which allows, you know, for the receivers to get downfield, to get in behind those linebackers. So, you know, we have to be, again, disciplined, reading our keys and then getting back to where we need to be to force the higher throws.
Yeah, how Washington's defense performs on Sunday is a big deal. The whole point of having a defense as talented as Washington's is for a game like this one, a game against a really good team, at least in theory, on the road. When you're good defensively, you have a chance in every game, no matter the opponent, because you don't need to score that many points. This is the kind of game in which scoring points could be a problem. given the Bills' very good defense, and so Washington's defense needs to get its act together. Ron on Thursday on whether this week has served as a wake-up call for Washington's defense.
I think if anything provides it is, you know, looking at the tapes. You know, that to me is probably more important for those guys to understand. Because when you look at when they do things the way, you know, they're capable of, they're pretty darn good. And we see that. We see that with the rush. We see that with the run defense. We see that with the coverage. So really, to me, it's, you know, I mean, we've talked a lot about it. And I really do think a lot has been said. You know, it's just a matter, again, of continue to work together, continue to grind together and understand just, you know, how important it is that we all do our job.
Yes, it is. No more freelancing. No more miscommunications. What kind of games are Chase Young and Montez Sweat going to have on Sunday? Chase has not been as bad as some people have made him out to be, but he has not been at his best. Montez is coming off a strong performance in the win over the Giants. Now, Ron has said the teams have been playing Chase and Montez differently so far this season, although Jack Del Rio at his post-practice press conference on Wednesday seemed to pour some cold water on that notion. But this is Ron on Thursday with more on how teams are playing Chase Young and Montez Sweat.
Well, somebody put out some numbers too that kind of supported that as well. That I think we've as a team have faced the second most amounts of double teams and play action passing. So you know the numbers are there that will support that. From what I understand. Now, I can say, like I told you, on my own, counting them, there's a substantial number of double teams, chips, and play action passes.
And so what can Washington do to counteract those things?
Well, part of it is depending on what type of protection they have, there's going to be some people that are going to be singled up. Those guys have to win. They really, truly do. Secondly, the guys that are getting doubled have to put it upon themselves to understand how to rush the doubles, you know, how to attack them. And that's one of the things that we have been talking about, we've been working with in terms of getting both Chase and Montez to understand what's going to happen. You know, part of it is understanding that, you know, if I'm going to get this action from this guy, will I attack it that way? If I'm getting this, then I go ahead and do that. I mean, they have to understand exactly what is going to benefit them as far as attacking, you know, double teams.
And Ron also got into this. Do Chase Young and Montez Sweat get frustrated with how they've been dealt with so far this season?
Oh, yeah, they get frustrated. I mean, they want to make plays. I mean, that's the truth. I mean, these guys are they're high-impact players. They know it. But the thing that comes with it is comes the responsibility of people paying a little more attention to, understanding what they're going to try to do to create time for their quarterbacks. They're not going to sit there and line up all the time one-on-one and, you know, take their chances. They're going to try and do it judiciously by figuring out when can they, you know, when can they single up? When do they have to double? When do they have to chip? When are they going to run play action? You know, that's the things our guys have to understand.
Yeah, and look, ultimately, there needs to be production from Washington's defense. Double teams and chips and play action. Every good defense faces those things. You got to deliver. Personally, I'm much more concerned with overall unit performance than I am with individual performance. I don't really care how many sacks Chase Young has this season. I think people get way too caught up in that. If Chase Young is part of a Washington defense that ends up being great, that's good enough for me because there will have been plenty of good things that Chase will have provided that you can't necessarily quantify. But Washington's defense has not been great through two games. And so the lack of production for Chase stands out. Now, I mentioned the Bills' very good defense. The Bills through week two, number two in the NFL in total defense per DVOA. This figures to be the biggest test yet for Taylor Heinicke as a Washington quarterback. Although, remember, he last postseason did do quite well against a very good defense and that of the eventual Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who, yes, were without a key player and linebacker Devin White. Although, man, you listen to some of the Taylor Heinicke deniers, the Taylor Heinicke haters, the taters, as I like to call them. You'd think that Devin White is Dick Butkus, but anyway, Sunday is a big spot for Heinicke, no doubt. We on Thursday's show, episode 151, discuss what Scott Turner on Wednesday said about Heinicke, including the reality of how Heinicke entered the NFL, likely forever impacting how Heinicke is viewed, you know, undrafted free agent out of Old Dominion. It's going to be impossible for coaches and executives to just delete that from their memories. Ron on Thursday on why the NFL has such a hard time moving beyond initial evaluations of players.
People don't want to be wrong. You know, I mean, that's the truth of the matter. I mean, you know, you at some point have to admit a mistake, and people don't want to admit that. So I think that's one of the things that's unfair about it. But, you know, it goes back to the old saying, you treat everybody fair, but you don't treat everybody the same. And that's what people look at, unfortunately. And, you know, you have to be willing in certain circumstances to say, you know, we were wrong. We made a mistake and move on from it and work on something else. But I think that's one of the reasons why it happens, you know. And that's why some people stick with first and second rounders a little bit longer than they need to or they should. As opposed to, you know, all of a sudden something bad happens and a free agent's tossed. That's, I think, is, you know, the explanation.
And I think that Ron is totally right about that. People don't like to be wrong, okay? We all want to be right. It doesn't feel good when you're wrong. But we're all wrong a lot. I've been wrong plenty of times. Ron then got asked a follow-up question. Has Ron himself been guilty of letting an initial evaluation of a player distort his view of the player? And pay close attention to Ron's answer.
I would say you probably went through that initially, but you know, really the thing that I've learned more than anything else is really it's about the contribution. Can the guy help, and how does he help us win? That's probably the more important thing, I think. And you know, we went through a little bit of that last year, and fortunately with the support of ownership, you know, we were able to go ahead and move from some guys that, in spite of their situations, their draft status, we were able to, like I said, make some moves and hopefully make good moves so we can, you know, go forward.
So, did what stood out to me stand out to you? That last part of the cut. Ron referencing moving on from guys, quote, fortunately, with the support of ownership. End quote. Had to be talking about Dwayne Haskins, right? Being allowed by Dan Snyder to release Dwayne Haskins last December off Strippergate, and then Dwayne's horrendous performance in the loss to the Carolina Panthers at FedEx Field in Week 16. But Ron did say guys, the plural of guy, so perhaps Ron was talking also about people like Alex Smith and Ryan Kerrigan and Morgan Moses, right? Washington parted with all of those guys this past offseason in various ways. But I thought that was a pretty blunt reveal by Ron, him conceding that ownership approval, the approval of Dan Snyder, the approval of the Danny, was a part of cutting ties with those guys.
First off, happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yes, hello, Danny. Happy Thanksgiving. A few more items from Ron's post-practice press conference on Thursday. We did get a Curtis Samuel update. Kinda. Sorta. So Samuel at practice on Wednesday was seen running along a sideline with a helmet on. Samuel remains on the reserve injured list due to the groin injury. Washington placed Samuel on the reserve injured list on September 10th. Now, a player on the reserve injured list is eligible to start practicing after spending 3 weeks on the list. His team then has 21 days to place him back on its active roster. So we are getting closer to when Samuel could potentially start practicing. Ron on Thursday on whether Samuel might be back practicing soon.
We'll see. He's had a good week, good solid week. You know, as has Derek Foster, so you feel really good about him. So we'll see again what happens after Sunday.
Yeah, Washington on September 1st placed Derek Forrest on the reserve injured list due to a hamstring injury. We also have this. Washington has been operating with a 52-man active roster for a while now. You're allowed to have 53 players on your active roster. Washington has had just 52 players on its active roster for a while now. Ron on Thursday on why.
There's no real hurry for us to do anything. We like our situation, our circumstances, where we are. You know, we've looked at a lot of people out there. We you know, don't feel the need or the urgency right now. They're you know, everybody's healthy, and so we're just going to see what happens after this week, and we'll go from there. I mean, you know, when we made the last move we did with Fitz, it came on a short week, and we only had 4 days. You know, and so instead of just forcing somebody up, We thought we would wait and see how we got out of the Thursday game, and then we looked at the roster again and said, you know what, everybody's relatively healthy. We're fine right now, but who knows, and we'll wait to see what happens after Buffalo.
Yeah, and what you heard there from Ron was an admission of something that we shouldn't take for granted. Washington, when it comes to players on the active roster, has been remarkably healthy so far. Knock on wood. Now, notice I said players on the active roster. Washington has Ryan Fitzpatrick and Curtis Samuel on the reserve injured list. So you can't say that Washington has been immune to injuries so far, because that sure as heck ain't true, right? I mean, your top two offensive free agent acquisitions from this past offseason are on the reserve injured list. You know, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you like to play? But in terms of players on Washington's active roster, very little in the way of injuries right now. Washington's injury report has just two players. Antonio Gibson, limited in practice on Wednesday, but a full participant in practice on Thursday. He's dealing with a shoulder. And Matt Ioannidis, he did not practice on Wednesday, but was limited in practice on Thursday due to a knee. That's it, just two guys. I mean, for comparison's sake, the Bills injury report has 11 players, although some guys have been on the report simply for rest. But Washington right now has some flexibility when it comes to the active roster. Ah, speaking of flexibility.
Position flex.
Yes, Ron, position flex. Well, you hopefully know by now that John Granlin of Real Broker is the master of commission flex. Listen up. If you're looking to sell your home, the days of some flat commission rate, regardless of how easy it is to sell your home, are done. John Granlin is changing the game with a groundbreaking concept called commission flex. What is commission flex, you ask? It's simple. Flexible commission rates. You see, not every house requires the same amount of work or money spent marketing. So why should you pay the same fees? It doesn't make sense. It's never made sense. If your house is going to sell in 6 minutes, don't pay 6%. John Granlin will put a marketing plan together for you that will maximize your home's value and help you keep more of your hard-earned equity in your pocket. You see, John Granlin has a menu of commission packages from which you can choose, including selling your home for free. Yeah, you heard that right. For free, zero commission. Some conditions do apply. But interviewing John Granlin is an absolute no-brainer. He can come by your house, give you a step-by-step plan on what to do to get top dollar, and maybe even more importantly, what not to do, so you don't spend needlessly, and there is never any obligation to list or sell. So if you need to sell your home and aren't sure to whom to turn, if you've been trying to sell your home and you're not satisfied with how things are going, if you're even just thinking about selling your home, do yourself a favor and call John Granlin. You have nothing to lose, and this is a phone call that could make and or save you tens of thousands of dollars. Call John G now, 703-537-6747. When you talk to John G, make sure that you tell him that Al Galdi sent you, and make sure that you ask John G about what you keep hearing about on the Al Galdi podcast, Commission Flex. That phone number again, 703-537-6747, or visit johngsellsforfree.com. That's johngsellsforfree.com. John Granlin, nobody will do a better job of selling your home. And remember, he is the master of commission flex.
Position flex.
Yes, Ron, just like position flex. As we prepare for the Washington football team's game at the Buffalo Bills this Sunday afternoon at 1, time now for our special guest, Bills insider Matt Perino of Syracuse.com, co-host of Shout, the Buffalo Football Podcast. Matt, it's great to have you on, man. How are you?
I'm great, Al. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to take a look at this Washington defense, another good test for the Bills. I think a lot of fans were excited to welcome back Ryan Fitzpatrick. Obviously, that won't be the case, but I still expect a pretty fun game on Sunday.
Yeah, no doubt. Bills are 1-1, 23-16 home loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers in week one, 35-0 win at the Miami Dolphins in week two. I know the Bills' offense has had some issues so far. I would think that that has something to do with playing two good defenses, but safe to say that this Bills' defense is as good, maybe even better than the Bills' defense last season.
Yeah, it's looking a lot like the unit that Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier had in 2019 with maybe an even better front, which is what they emphasized this offseason. They drafted Greg Rousseau and Carlos Basham with their first two picks, defensive ends, in April's draft, and Basham's been a healthy scratch the first 2 weeks because of how many guys they have up front. They got Starlet Tulele back, who opted out last year, and we saw his impact this past weekend. He's a guy that at times defenses have to assign two or three people to block because of his ability to just eat up space, and he's kind of quick for his size. I often say that he's kind of a smaller, poor man's version of Vita Vea, and that's a huge addition to this defensive line. It allows a lot of these guys to play a little bit more freely. Ed Oliver, Jerry Hughes, and they ended up having six sacks against Miami. Obviously, they have some offensive line issues, but A.J. Epenesa had a breakout performance. They drafted him in the second round last year. I think he ended up with nine pressures, and he knocked Tua Tagovailoa out of the game. So up front defensively is where the biggest jump has been made, and then they have one of the best secondaries in the league, led by Tre'Davious White, cornerback.
What, if anything, is a concern with this Bills defense? Because the defense certainly seems stacked.
You know, I think a lot of fans are still waiting for Tremaine Edmonds, who they picked in the same draft as Josh Allen in the first round, the middle linebacker, to really become that elite playmaker. And you know, the splash plays, the, you know, not missing tackles. And I think he's been solid in the first two games, but it's just something where you're not seeing him flash over and over again. I think one of the reasons is that everybody else around him is making plays. So it might just be a situation where whose turn is it this week? They paid Matt Milano this offseason, 4-year, $45 million deal, and he's come out and just been playing like his hair's on fire. I mean, they used him primarily as a blitzer against Miami, and he just caused havoc for that offensive line. So I think maybe that, but to your point, there's not a real lot going wrong right now. I mean, even at cornerback too, which was the primary position of need this offseason, Levi Wallace has continued to win that job, and he played well in the first quarter. He got injured. Dane Jackson, their seventh round pick from last year, came in and continued to play pretty well. Made a big stop on a fourth down play. So they just have, this is a group that's been together now for the most part for 4 years under McDermott and Leslie Frazier. They all know each other. They know the scheme. They're really tough to play against.
So you mentioned Josh Allen. His stats through two games aren't great, but we know that the numbers don't always tell the whole story. How has Josh Allen looked to you so far?
He hasn't looked as good as he looked last year. There's no doubt about that. I mean, it seems like offensively, they're just not in sync. And I wonder how much, you know, you'd probably never get them to admit this, but how much they maybe opened up the playbook and installed a little bit more. I mean, Josh has talked about so much over the years how complicated Brian Daboll's system is. And I feel like from what I've watched, it just looks like it might be a little bit too complicated right now. And they need to maybe simplify things a little bit. They have so much talent at the receiver position. And I think sometimes, you know, Brian Daboll, he's had this group for 4 years, so you know he's always fine-tuning and adding and kind of switching things around. I think sometimes you just gotta, you know, Emmanuel Sanders said it best, just go out there and play backyard football. And I think sometimes they're overthinking it. I think that's a problem. I mean, and I think, you know, the full stadiums, you know, that's one of the things that people talked about this offseason. How is Josh going to deal with that? He's had some really he gets really pumped up before a game. And so when he's played in front of big crowds, especially on the road at times, it's affected him. He's been antsy. He's forced things. We've seen a little bit of that. So I think it's about just calming down a little bit, relying on the guys that you have. Cole Beasley, Stephon Diggs get the ball in their hands pretty shortly after you snap the ball, and then go from there. I'm not concerned yet, but I think we're maybe a game or two away if this script doesn't flip to where you're starting to really ask some questions about what's going on with this offense.
Wow. Interesting to hear that. I mean, with Josh Allen, right? Number 7 overall pick in the 2018 NFL draft, not that good in his first season, better in his second season, and then outstanding last season. Was his success last season a surprise, or was there a feeling that a breakout season was coming?
You know, I think the level that he reached last year was mildly surprising to me. Now, I had been higher on him, even going back to his rookie year, than I think most. But even what he was able to do last year, especially against some of the top defenses that he faced. I think he faced like four top 10 defenses last year, and he had a passer rating over 110 in those games. Just his accuracy numbers were unbelievable. I mean, he started the season these first two games, and he hasn't had a game yet where he's completed 60% of his passes. He only had two of those games last year where he didn't reach 60%. So there's just some concerning stats. I saw like his completion percentage on air yards traveled 15 yards or more. He's like 4 for 17, and he completed 50% of those throws last year. So there's some of these little stats that you're starting to look at and, you know, but that are concerning. But we got to remember, and like fans overreacted a little bit in the first half last week. They scored 35 points. They had 11 or 12 drives. They scored 5 touchdowns. They got their running game going. Zach Moss looked like the guy that they drafted. He famously said, "I want to make people make business decisions when they try to tackle me." And I think some of those people made those decisions in the Miami Dolphins secondary on Sunday. And then Devin Singletary has been, you know, that lead back. He opened up the game with a 46-yard touchdown run last week. So I think they're learning how to be a little bit more of a complete offense, and the passing game hasn't been as effective, but I think there's just too much talent for it not to be figured out.
We're talking Washington at Buffalo with Bills insider Matt Perino of Syracuse.com, co-host of Shout, the Buffalo football podcast. So with the skill position players, nobody better than the Maryland product, Stephon Diggs. This is year two for him with the Bills. Monster numbers last regular season, led the NFL in both receptions and receiving yards. I know that things did not end well for Diggs with the Minnesota Vikings, but it sure seems like it has been smooth sailing for Diggs with the Bills so far. Is that in fact the case?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a team captain. They absolutely love him in the locker room. I think what sometimes it's just about giving a guy like this, who's obviously supremely talented, what he wants. And he wanted to be in an offense where he felt that he was given a chance to help the team win. And I think that was one of the biggest disconnects in Minnesota, was that, you know, they had him and Adam Thielen, and they had put up some pretty impressive passing numbers, and the team still wanted to kind of rely on this run-heavy approach. And, you know, when you're a guy like Diggs, who led the NFL in receiving last year, you know, knowing that he had that in him, I think he just wanted a place that he can go to that not only appreciated it, but really took advantage of his skill set. And they have. I mean, they put him in a situation where he's getting 10 targets minimum per week, and that's in a very crowded wide receiver room. Cole Beasley's a guy you can get 10 to 15 a week if you wanted to. Emmanuel Sanders has been to a Super Bowl, won a Super Bowl in this league, has been really productive for a long time. And then they have some really talented younger players. Gabriel Davis caught 7 touchdowns last year as a rookie, 4th round pick out of UCF. So, you know, Diggs has been everything they wanted him to be. Deion Dawkins said after a game last year, I want to rip the C off of my chest and put it on Diggs' chest. That's how much he's meant to us. Because as a building franchise, you know, as they were kind of putting all the pieces around Josh Allen, Dawkins said it really well in a Players Tribune article. He's like, "I don't think any of us really truly knew what it meant to play with a superstar before." Because Josh wasn't a superstar when they drafted him. I mean, he's become one. But Stephon Diggs came in packaged as that. And what he's meant in the locker room, too, and how he pushes guys, and just his general demeanor, I really think it's been a home run. People questioned that deal at the time. I didn't. But some people nationally questioned the deal because DeAndre Hopkins went for what he went, and then the Bills gave up a first for Diggs. But that was exactly what Josh Allen needed, and that's what Brandon Bean has done such a good job of, is figuring that out and then executing that and putting people in pieces around Allen.
How is the Bills' offensive line doing?
Well, it was a tale of 2 weeks. They came out of the gates, and it was pretty troublesome. They got absolutely manhandled by the Pittsburgh Steelers front. I mean, Cam Hayward, I think he had 8 pressures. TJ Watt had 7. They had a strip sack on Josh Allen. And, you know, this offense figured some things out last week against the Dolphins. And a big reason why is this offensive line played better. They ran the ball more. And I think a couple guys in this offensive line appreciated that. I think that as much success as they had as a passing team last week, there's some guys that really excel in the run game. John Feliciano, Cody Ford. You know, I think at times you got to feed those guys too and let them get out in space and and clear the road a little bit for their running back. So I think that if they can be a little bit more efficient in the passing game, I think that the run pass split that we saw last week against Miami makes a little bit more sense, and it makes it a little bit easier on the offensive line. I mean, when you're passing the ball 50 times a game like they did against the Steelers, you know, it's just a much more fast-paced, difficult game. And for Deion Dawkins, the left tackle, he had COVID. Missed 2 weeks of training camp, had a really tough battle with it, said there were days when he didn't even know he was going to make it when he was in the hospital. And so his conditioning has been a real concern, and he looked really tired week one. He looked a lot better this past week, still playing 100% of the snaps, which is good news for the Bills because they have a rookie, very raw player in Spencer Brown behind him. But I think this offensive line will be fine. I think that it's been a slow start. I think Darrell Williams, who earned a 3-year contract extension, they paid him pretty good money, $9 or $10 million a year, based on his performance last year in his first year in Buffalo. He needs to be better. He's really, you know, when you go back and look at the tape, there's been a lot of matchups that he's lost early on, and he's got to get better. Yeah, that's really important piece of this.
Wow. So Dawkins was in the hospital due to COVID-19.
Yeah, he had to spend 4 days in the hospital. He had just gotten vaccinated, his second shot, and he ended up getting COVID a couple days after that, right before he would have been fully vaccinated, and really put him out. I mean, he struggled quite a bit. He took everybody through it. There's some good stories out there about the day that he shared his experience, and it's funny because the Bills obviously have been in the news the last 3 months for their, you know, couple players' stance on the vaccination and not wanting to be vaccinated. And he came back into the room, told his story, and I'm pretty sure without knowing the extent of it, some people made some decisions based on what he went through. And they've had a small uptick in their vaccination rate since then. But yeah, he's not the same play. He's not that franchise left tackle. Hasn't looked like it in the first 2 weeks, and understandably why.
Interesting to hear that. Bigger picture topic. As you know, the Bills went 17 consecutive seasons without a playoff appearance before making the playoffs 3 times over the last 4 seasons with Sean McDermott as head coach and Brandon Bean as general manager. This game on Sunday, a Carolina Panthers reunion of sorts with Ron Rivera and Marty Herney, now with Washington, and McDermott and Bean with the Bills. What have McDermott and Bean meant to the Bills?
They've completely revitalized the sports city. I mean, the Sabres, for anybody that watches hockey, have been the laughingstock of the NHL for a couple decades now almost. I think they have the longest playoff drought in sports. The Bills had that before Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean got here. And they really, I feel like, provided the NFL with a blueprint for how to rebuild a catastrophe. I mean, under Rex Ryan, this thing was, you know, really just as bad as you can make it. And there was a lot of hype when he came in. Tyrod Taylor was, you know, pretty good at the start of that thing, but, you know, they just never won. And, you know, McDermott came in here year one with a roster that had no business making the playoffs, and they made it anyway. I mean, they snuck in, they needed some help. But I think that that set the foundation for the expectations here. And when they realized they had to go get their quarterback, they got Josh Allen. And then what I mentioned earlier, how Bean has constructed this thing, drafting Allen in 18, then in that first offseason, completely rebuilding the offensive line, spending money on the offensive line. Then starting in 19 with Cole Beasley and John Brown, and then 20, obviously, with Diggs, getting him the weapons that he needs. And so, I mean, they've meant everything to it. I mean, you're talking about the Bills as a Super Bowl contender after 20 years of being the brunt of jokes around the league. So, yeah, it's been quite a run for them. And, you know, this is a massive year for the Bills. And it's been kind of like a bumpy start. But I think that the way that they dominated the Dolphins and their offense being so up and down, despite scoring the points that they scored, I think that there's a high ceiling for this roster.
Final question. You mentioned Ryan Fitzpatrick. So he was the Bills' quarterback 2009 through 2012. One of the worst losses for Washington over the last, you know, 10, 15 years was a shutout loss to the Bills in Toronto in 2011. Fitzpatrick was the Bills' starting quarterback. I know he got an extension from the Bills that didn't quite work out, but how is Ryan Fitzpatrick remembered in Buffalo?
I think with a lot of love, and I think Fitzpatrick obviously shares that. He mentioned recently that there was no place that he played that was quite like Buffalo, and obviously the fans really embrace players around here. And the problem with Fitzpatrick was he had some really high moments in Buffalo, but then there were some of those chaotic moments that he's had over the course of his career where he can throw for 404 touchdowns 1 week and then, you know, 250 and four interceptions the next. And he was just a little bit too up and down. And I think that the team at the time felt like they couldn't win long term with him. And it stinks because I always feel like Fitzpatrick needed to find a place where when he really understood who he was going to be in the league, a team to really just give him the reins for a couple of years and just let him figure it out the same way you would with a young quarterback like a Josh Allen or a Justin Herbert. And maybe he wouldn't reach those kinds of heights. But I always have a soft spot for Fitzpatrick. I mean, back then when he was in Buffalo, I was still kind of, you know, cheering for the team as a fan before I had started covering them. And I think he's remembered fondly. Fitzmagic. There's T-shirts that you'll see at time to time around town with his face on it. And so Bills fans love Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, everybody loves him. He's one of the more likable guys in the NFL. But like you said, there's that high variance thing of he can be great and he can be not so great. Bills insider Matt Perino of Syracuse.com, co-host of Shout, the Buffalo football podcast. Matt, I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, my rhyming keys for a Washington win at Buffalo on Sunday afternoon and my prediction for the game. We'll get to all of that after this.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, my friends, it is time to rhyme. It is time for Rhyming Keys, as I will rhyme the path to victory for the Washington football team in its game at the Buffalo Bills this Sunday afternoon at 1. We had a 2016 Washington loss to the Los Angeles Chargers at FedEx Field in Week 1. We had a 30-29 Washington win over the New York Giants at FedEx Field in Week 2. What, oh what, awaits us in Week 3? These rhymes are not meant to be good. They are simply meant to make a few points. And in fact, we have a philosophy for this segment. The worse the rhyme, the better the time. And so here we go. Rhyming keys for Washington at Buffalo. How does Washington win this game? Let us rhyme the ways. Rhyming key number one. This is for Washington's defense. Make Josh say, oh gosh. Josh Allen was great last season. We all know that. But Josh Allen has not been great so far this season. and Washington needs to capitalize on that. Allen so far this season has a yards per pass attempt of just 5.35. Allen so far this season has a completion percentage of just 55.95. Those numbers are awful. Allen, even in the Bills' 35-0 win at the Miami Dolphins in week two, wasn't that good. He completed just 17 of 33 passes. He threw for just 179 yards. That's 5.42 yards per pass attempt. That's not good. But Allen, like I said, was great last season. Finished last regular season number 5 among qualified quarterbacks in the NFL in yards per pass attempt at 7.94. He had, for last regular season, 37 touchdown passes versus 10 interceptions. A big issue for Allen through two games has been him being pressured. Allen, per Sport Radar, has been pressured on 30.8% of his dropbacks. The Bills' starting left tackle, Deion Dawkins, has struggled through two games, has an overall grade per Pro Football Focus of just 53.7. T.J. Watt in the Pittsburgh Steelers' 23-16 win at the Bills in Week 1 finished with 2 sacks, 5 quarterback hits, and a forced fumble. He was dominant. That's the kind of game that I'd love to see from Chase Young and or Montez Sweat on Sunday. Washington's pass rush was much better in the win over the Giants than the pass rush was in the loss to the Chargers. There's a chance for the pass rush to be good for a second consecutive game here, and there's a chance to make an opposing quarterback truly look bad for the first time this season. And of course, this isn't just about Washington's defensive line. The back 7 or 6 need to be better in coverage. I don't want to hear any more about, you know, miscommunication, okay? It's troubling enough that that's been a problem in each of the first two games. Like, what do these guys need? Marriage counseling, okay? Communicate better. Because if they don't, the Maryland product, Stephon Diggs, is going to have a monster game, and we have already seen multiple opposing receivers have big games against Washington this season. And so rhyming key number 1, this is for Washington's defense: make Josh say, oh gosh. Rhyming key number 2 for Washington at Buffalo: this is another one for Washington's defense: do not let the Bills succeed when they run the zone read. The zone read, the read option, call it what you want. But how aggravating was Washington getting worked by Daniel Jones via the read option in the win over the Giants. Jones finished that game with 9 carries for 95 yards and a touchdown. The Giants' first offensive drive resulted in Daniel Jones' first quarter second and goal 6-yard shotgun quarterback draw touchdown run on which Cameron Curl failed on an attempted tackle. That play was not a read option play, but the 8th snap of the drive was. Daniel Jones' 2nd and 6, 15-yard shotgun read option run. The Giants' 4th offensive drive resulted in Graham Gano's 2nd quarter 23-yard field goal. The 5th snap of that drive, Landon Collins completely fooled on the fake, and a Daniel Jones 58-yard shotgun read option touchdown run that was nullified via a holding penalty on the Giants. But still, that play went down as a 46-yard run for Jones. Well, Josh Allen is plenty mobile. In fact, Josh Allen, even with his bad passing numbers so far this season, has been impactful as a runner. Allen, through week 2, was number 5 among qualified NFL quarterbacks in ESPN's clutch-weighted expected points added via rushes. That's a mouthful. I know, that's a geeky advanced stat, but just know that that's a great measure of quarterback production as a runner. Allen, for the 2020 regular season, it was number 6 among qualified NFL quarterbacks in ESPN's clutch-weighted expected points added via rushes. The read option is not new. I mean, the read option has been in the NFL for more than a decade now. Of course, it was Washington that helped to popularize the read option at the NFL level with what Mike and Kyle Shanahan did with Robert Griffin III in 2012. And making use of the read option at the NFL level prior to the Shanahans with RG3 was Ron Rivera. His Carolina Panthers made usage of the read option in Cam Newton's rookie season 2011, which was Ron's first season as Panthers head coach. Allen has the ability to torch you as a runner, certainly on just plain scrambles and via extending passing plays, but also via the read option. Washington has got to play the read option better, be smarter, be more disciplined, and do a better job at getting off blocks. Rhyming key number two, another one for Washington's defense. Do not let the Bills succeed when they run the zone read. Rhyming key number three for Washington at Buffalo. This is for Terry McLaurin. Display your might against Tre'Davious White. Terry was awesome in the win over the Giants. 11 receptions for 107 yards and a touchdown on 14 targets. And how about the job that he did on the Giants' top corner, James Bradbury? Now, I know Bradbury had that fourth quarter interception, but I still would say that Terry won that battle. Washington's third offensive drive resulted in Taylor Heineke's second quarter first and 10, 11-yard shotgun play action touchdown pass to Terry McLaurin, who beat corner James Bradbury. Also on the drive, 12th snap, the snap right before the touchdown, Taylor Heineke, a first and 10, 16-yard under center play action completion to Terry McLaurin, who on his route schooled corner James Bradbury. Washington's eighth offensive drive resulted in Dustin Hopkins' fourth quarter 37-yard field goal. The sixth snap of that drive, Terry McLaurin drew a third and 7, 5-yard holding penalty on corner James Bradbury for a Washington first down. Terry McLaurin has faced off with a number of high-level corners over his two-plus NFL seasons and has more than held his own. The Bills in Tre'Davious White, though, do have one of the best corners in the NFL. Tre'Davious White, over his first four regular seasons, 2017 through 2020, had 15 interceptions. He was a first-team All-Pro selection for the 2019 regular season. And how about this? Tre'Davious White, over the 2019 and 2020 regular seasons, was the highest-graded qualified corner in the NFL on third downs for Pro Football Focus at 90.3. Now, Terry should fear no corner. Terry is more than capable of winning this matchup, just like he won the matchup with Bradbury. But this is a challenge. And so rhyming key number three for Terry McLaurin. Display your might against Tre'Davious White. And one more. It is number four. This is for Taylor Heineke. Believe in your skills in facing this defense of the Bills. This is a big test for Tay-Tay, no doubt. Big Tay has a big game on Sunday. Bills through week two, number two in the NFL in total defense per Football Outsiders DVOA metric. Pitched a shutout in week two, a 35-0 win at the Miami Dolphins. There really is no obvious weakness on the Bills defense. And you know that the Bills head coach Sean McDermott and the Bills defensive coordinator and assistant head coach Leslie Frazier have been cooking up all kinds of things to confuse Heineke and throw him off. McDermott and Frazier are counting on inaccuracy from Heineke. McDermott and Frazier are thinking that Heineke might panic and this is his first road game as a Washington quarterback. The Bills fans, Bills Mafia, will be loud and in full effect. Heineke has got to channel his inner Jim Zorn and stay medium. Heineke did such a good job of that in the win over the Giants. He needs to continue to keep his composure. He needs to make good decisions, as he has been doing. He needs to trust his playmakers because they made plays in the win over the Giants. I mean, not every ball from Heineke was perfect, but the likes of Terry McLaurin and Logan Thomas and Adam Humphries and De'Ami Brown and Ricky Seals-Jones, all of them made plays to varying degrees. And Heineke certainly needs to be willing to use his legs. Didn't have to do much of that in the win over the Giants. He may well have to do a good bit of that at the Bills on Sunday. And so rhyming key number four, this is for Taylor Heineke. Believe in your skills in facing this defense of the Bills. All right, my friends, it is prediction time. So the line for this game has come down significantly. The line for Caesars Sportsbook as of early Friday morning, Washington plus 7.5 of the line having been Washington plus 9 just a few days ago. And in at least some shops, the line was 9.5 at one point. There has been significant money coming in on Washington. Caesars took a $300,000 bet on Washington at plus 9, contributing to the line movement. Now, just because there's a lot of money coming in on one side doesn't necessarily mean that that money is sharp money, but the money could be sharp money, and certainly there's been enough money or enough quality money to where the line for this game has come down significantly. I have not had a great feeling about this game from a Washington perspective, but from strictly a gambling standpoint, somebody somewhere knows some things for that line to have been bet down the way that it has been. And so because of that, I'm going to take Washington plus the points. I'm not sure that Washington wins, but I do think that Washington can keep this game close. I said, I do think that Washington can keep this game close.
It means you're close.
Yes, Brucey. Thank you. Yes, Washington's defense has been disappointing, but the Bills' offense has been disappointing as well. Final score, Bills 24, Washington 20. So it was in June of this Major League Baseball season that Kyle Schwarber, of course, then on the Nationals, had maybe the greatest month that any Nats player has ever had. Schwarber this past June hit 16 home runs and slugged 760. The Nats were 40-38 at the end of June, and then came maybe the worst month in Nationals history, July 2021, and we are where we are now. But Juan Soto right now, in this month of September, is having a month that is at least challenging the greatness that was Kyle Schwarber's June, and may well be exceeding Kyle Schwarber's June. Soto was at it again on Thursday night in a 3-2 win at the Cincinnati Reds in game one of a four-game series. The Nats, the boys, they improved to 64-89 on the season.
I'm proud of the boys.
Yes, Davey, the boys. And Juan Soto was out there again as the Nats starting right fielder and number three batter. And Juan Soto was at it again. 3-for-3 with 2 solo homers, a single, and a history-making walk. That walk came in the top of the first, Soto drawing a 1-out 9-pitch walk to set a new Nats/Expos record for most walks by a player in a regular season at 131. Soto in the Nats' one-run third had a 2-out full-count single up the middle, despite having been down in the count at 1.12. Soto in the top of the sixth had an opposite field leadoff homer to left field on an 0-2 pitch for a 2-0 Nats lead. The homer was Soto's 28th of the season when it projected 368 feet per Statcast. Soto in the top of the seventh had a 2-out full count opposite field solo homer to left field for a 3-0 Nats lead. That homer was Soto's 29th of the season and went a projected 348 feet per Statcast. So neither homer was a bomb, okay? Neither homer was a Ruthian clout, but a homer is a homer. Juan Soto got on base 4 times again on Thursday night. This game, in fact, marked the 24th time this season that Soto reached base 4 times in a game. The only players to reach base 4 times in a game more times in a regular season are, you ready for this? Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Ted Williams, and Barry Bonds. 4 of the greatest hitters in the history of the sport, and I know Bonds was a juicer, but he still was a great hitter. That's the company that Juan Soto is now in with what Soto is doing this season. Juan Soto now on the season has a major league leading batting average of .325, a major league leading on base percentage of .470. He has a slugging percentage of .559. His OPS for the season is 1,029. He's number 2 in the majors in OPS. And Juan Soto entered games on Thursday, number 1 among all National League position players in wins above replacement for Baseball Reference at 6.9. I will say what I said on Thursday's show, episode 151. Juan Soto is a very legitimate candidate for National League MVP. I don't care that the Nats are a bad team. That should have nothing to do with whether Soto is a legitimate candidate. You very much could argue right now that Juan Soto is the leading candidate, the most deserving candidate for National League MVP. The run that he is on is outstanding. His overall season numbers are spectacular. And Juan Soto's body of work isn't just about his batting. Again, he's number 1 among all National League position players in WAR per Baseball Reference. Understand, WAR takes into account everything you do as a player, your batting, your base running, and your defense. Juan Soto has played a good right field this season for the Nats. But here now is Juan Soto's September slash line. I mean, I mentioned Kyle Schwarber, right? Kyle Schwarber in June was out of this world. Again, 16 home runs, a slugging percentage of 760. Juan Soto now in the month of September is slugging 838. Juan Soto's slugging percentage in the month of September is 78 points higher than Kyle Schwarber's slugging percentage for that month of June. And Soto in this month of September is batting 473. And Soto in this month of September has a 608 on base percentage. The guy is a freak of nature. The guy is putting together the best season of his major league career. It didn't always feel this way. You know, there was a while this season in which Soto wasn't hitting for power. We kind of wondered, like, what's going on here with Soto? And no, man, his overall numbers are just fine for the 2021 MLB campaign. Another bright spot for the Nats in this 3-2 win at the Cincinnati Reds on Thursday night was Patrick Corbin, who, believe it or not, now has been good in three of his last four starts. Corbin on Thursday night, 6 2/3 scoreless innings. He had 7 strikeouts. Now, he did issue 4 walks, but he also gave up just 4 hits, a double, and 3 singles. He threw 59 strikes versus 40 balls on 99 pitches. And like I said, you take a step back, this is now 3 good starts over Patrick Corbin's last 4 starts. September 6th, a 4-3 win over the New York Mets at Nationals Park. Corbin, 3 runs in 7 innings. September 12th, a 6-2 win at the Pittsburgh Pirates. Corbin, 2 runs in 7 innings. The bad outing was his most recent outing prior to this one on Thursday night. Corbin, in a 6-0 loss to the Colorado Rockies at Nationals Park this past Saturday, got rocked. 6 runs, 5 earned in 4 innings. That was bad, and that was way too reminiscent of what we have seen way too often and what has been a nightmare of a 2021 season for Corbin. But overall, he has been better lately. And I tell you what, given how awful his 2021 season has been, you take anything you can construe as a positive for Patrick Corbin right now. And so if he is ending his season on a relative high note, you know, at least by his standards, then you go ahead and you accept that and you don't question that, because this guy needs to get back on track. This is one of the big priorities for the Nationals this offseason and next season, fixing Patrick Corbin. This is year 3 of a 6-year, $140 million contract. The Nats are stuck with Corbin, so they got to figure this out. And I think they can figure this out. I don't think that Corbin is a total lost cause, even though at times this season he has felt that way. And it's been a terrible year. I mean, he now, this season still, has the worst ERA among qualified pitchers in the majors at 5.92, but at least he's got the darn thing under 6. He also now has made 30 starts on the season, so he has been durable. I mean, there is something to be said for that. Like, it's not like the guy has had a bunch of injuries. It's just that the guy has been ineffective way too often, but he has been more effective lately. For the Nats bullpen on Thursday night, 2 relievers were good. One was not, though. So Mason Thompson entered the game, 5 of the 7th with 2 outs, a runner on 2nd, and the Nats up 3-0, and Thompson got the job done, struck out Jonathan India on 4 pitches. Tanner Rainey tossed a scoreless 8th with 2 strikeouts. That was good, especially considering that Tanner was facing the heart of the Reds lineup. But then Kyle Finnegan struggled in the 9th, gave up 2 runs. Gave up the 2 runs on a leadoff first pitch single by Eugenio Suarez, a pinch RBI triple by Max Schrock on a 1-2 pitch, and a pinch RBI groundout by Tucker Barnhart. And Finnegan also issued a 2-out full count hit by pitch of Jonathan India. So Finnegan was bad, but Thompson and Rainey were good. Rainey continues to look so good since being brought back up from AAA Rochester, and I would not be surprised at all if you start seeing Tanner Rainey as the Nats' quote-unquote closer, although in a lot of ways, Rainey was the closer on Thursday night, and that he got the higher leverage inning. That 8th inning was against the heart of the Reds lineup. Davey Martinez wanted to see Tanner Rainey face the heart of the Reds lineup, and Rainey got the job done. And then Finnegan, I guess you say Finnegan ultimately did get the job done, but it was a bumpy ride with him giving up the 2 runs. Comes into the game with the Nats up 3-0, exits the game, ends the game with the Nats winning 3-2. Some other observations from this win at the Reds. Another good game for Josh Bell. Nats starting first baseman, number 4 batter, 2 for 3 with 2 singles and a walk. Top of the 3rd, had a 2-out opposite field RBI single to left field. Top of the 6th, drew a 5-pitch walk. Top of the 7th, had a 2-out single. Josh Bell's OPS for the season up to 8.21. You know, if not for Soto just hitting out of his mind right now, I think there'd be a lot more attention on Josh Bell, and a guy who's gone from having a nightmare of a first month of the season to now having a really nice first season with the Nats. Again, 821 OPS on the year. You know, Bell has a 340 on base percentage. That's really good. I mean, Josh Bell has become a very good hitter for the Nationals this year. K-Bert Ruiz continued to demonstrate signs of blossoming as he was supposed to blossom as one of the premier prospects acquired by the Nats. When the Nats traded Max Scherzer and Trey Turner to the Los Angeles Dodgers in late July. Ruiz on Thursday night, 1-for-4 with a double. Top of the sixth, had a one-out double down the right field line on a 1-2 pitch. It was not, though, a good night for Luis Garcia. Garcia was actually the Nats' number five batter on Thursday night. Yadiel Hernandez has been placed on the paternity list. Garcia's been hitting well, and so Garcia got bumped up to the number five spot in Davey Martinez's lineup, but things did not go so well. Garcia 0-for-4 with a strikeout, left six men on base. Carter Kieboom had another rough game as well. Kieboom 0-for-4 with two strikeouts. He now, in this month of September, has a batting average of 167, an on-base percentage of 244, and a slugging percentage of 179. You know, for a while, things were trending upward with Carter Kieboom. That has not been the case for multiple weeks now. Another bad game on Thursday night. This has not been a good month of September. I mean, the Nationals, to me, are not in a position where they could just say, all right, the heck with Carter Kieboom for next season. Like, no, I think Kieboom's probably going to be back with the Nats, unless they include him in some kind of a trade. But, you know, with Kieboom, it's like you still got to figure out if this guy's a piece or not. But more and more, it looks like he may not be a piece. Now, some guys take multiple years to develop. Dansby Swanson of the Atlanta Braves is an example of one of those guys. So again, I don't just want to get rid of Carter Kieboom and be done with him, but it's not encouraging at all the way his 2021 season is ending. Something I do want to make mention of, too, with the Nationals, and this actually came out on Wednesday. Nationals insider Jesse Dougherty of the Washington Post reported that Nationals assistant general manager of baseball research and development, Sam Mondry-Cohen, has informed the Nats that he will not return once his contract expires at the end of the season. Now, Dougherty noted that while Mondry-Cohen does not have a new job lined up, Mondry-Cohen is planning to pursue opportunities with other clubs this coming offseason. So it's not like Sam Mondry-Cohen is getting out of baseball. Sam Mondry-Cohen is just getting out of the Nationals. Mondry-Cohen has been with the Nats since 2009. His departure comes off the departure of another guy in the Nationals research and development department, Scott Van Letten. Scott Van Letten left the Nats last month to become the lead man in the Colorado Rockies research and development department. Research and development is another way of saying analytics, okay? So the Nationals are losing two of their top guys, if not their two top guys, in analytics here, in Sam Mondry-Cohen and Scott Van Letten. And I bring this up for a few reasons. Number one, the fact that Mondry-Cohen is leaving on his own, as opposed to being fired, I think is interesting. Now, you know, Sam Mondry-Cohen, you talk to people, they'll tell you, this is a guy who has designs on ultimately being a general manager. And perhaps he sees the Nats with Mike Rizzo having not that long ago signed a contract extension. And, you know, every indication is that Rizzo has no plans on retiring anytime soon. Well, you're not going to become general manager of the Nationals anytime soon, or so it seems. So maybe Sam Mondry-Cohen is trying to go somewhere else that'll put him on a path to being the team's GM. But, you know, to me, if you're the Nats, right, and you've really lost your way when it comes to player development, you have a real problem right now with the state of the farm system, with how guys grow and develop in your organization. You've had a very tough time developing pitching, especially in recent years. To lose a bright young mind like Sam Mondry-Cohen, to me, is not a good thing. You know, that you don't want good, talented, young, rising people leaving your organization. And Mondry-Cohen is doing that. And I'm not trying to build the guy up to be, you know, the next Theo Epstein, but you know what? Maybe he is, you know, and that you're losing him and this guy, Scott Van Letten. I mean, maybe you replace those guys with better people. That's always possible. But there's a lot of change right now with the Nationals. The winds of change are blowing. It was on Tuesday that we had multiple reports of the Nationals having parted with multiple minor league coaches. High A manager Tommy Shields, Double A hitting coach Brian Rupp, Low A pitching coach Pat Rice, outfield and base running coordinator Gary Thurman, And again, maybe the Nats are better off without all these people. Maybe the Nats are going to be replacing these people with better people. But there is something going on here where you're seeing some significant change behind the scenes with the Nationals. And it's hard to ignore, okay, all of this change comes at the end of the season that has been a massive indictment of the Nationals' player development. So it's just something to be thinking about. There's a lot with this stuff that we don't know. I'll grant you that. Like, we don't have all of the information. So, I don't know, maybe Mike Rizzo didn't really want to keep Sam Mondry-Cohen and is kind of allowing him to leave for another job. Like, you don't know. You don't know. But the Nationals, more than anything this offseason, have got to rediscover their way regarding player development. Because when it comes to whether the Nats will be good again sooner rather than later, nothing matters more than the Nationals getting back to developing their own. You can't just keep signing guys and trading for guys, and that's how you get your good players. You've got to get back to drafting and developing players who turn into good players at the major league level. Game 2 for the Nats at the Reds, Friday night at 7:10. Paolo Espino versus Sonny Gray. All right, it is that time. Goldilocks for week 4 of the college football season. You've heard of Goldilocks and the Three Bears. This is Goldilocks, my weekly college football picks against the spreads for Maryland, Navy, Virginia Tech, and Virginia. 6-3 on the season, coming off a 3-0 week. You're welcome. All 4 teams are in action this weekend, although Virginia Tech is hosting Richmond, which is an FCS school, Saturday at noon, so that game is off the board in most shops. I will not be picking that game. Hokies are coming off a painful defeat, fell to 2-1 with a 27-21 loss at West Virginia last Saturday afternoon. Tech rallied from a 27-7 third quarter deficit to cut the Mountaineers' lead to 27-21, got a huge fourth quarter interception by defensive back Jermaine Waller on a 3rd and 10 at the Mountaineers' 25, giving the Hokies a 1st and 10 at the Mountaineers' 17 with 2:11 left in the fourth quarter. The Hokies eventually had a 1st and goal at the 3, but the Hokies failed. Running back Jalen Holston got stuffed on back-to-back runs, and quarterback Braxton Burmeister then had back-to-back incompletions for a turnover on downs. The Hokies' red zone offense was a mess as they in the game went just 1-for-4. In the red zone. All right, so Goldilocks. All odds are from Caesars Sportsbook as of early Friday morning. Goldilocks game number 1, Maryland, home to Kent State, Saturday afternoon at 3:30. The Terrapins are -14.5. Big number. Terps are 3-0. First time since 2016, are coming off a 2017 walk-off win at Illinois last Friday night. Joseph Petrino drilling a 32-yard field goal as time expired in the fourth quarter for the win. A very close game, despite Illinois having not been a good team. This game had reverse line movement and thus reeked of being a game in which the Terps would have issues, despite Illinois coming into the game just 1-2. The Terps did not cover, but they did win. The Terps were sluggish offensively for most of the game, but quarterback Talia Tungavailoa delivered again. 32 of 43 for 350 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions. He took 3 sacks. He had a big 2nd and 5, 35-yard shotgun read option run on the second offensive play of the second half. And he led 2 scoring drives in the fourth quarter to complete a comeback from a 17-10 fourth quarter deficit. Talia, over those 2 drives, went 7 of 8 for 101 yards and a touchdown. Kent State is 1-2. The 2 losses are blowout losses at then top 6 teams, 41-10 loss at then number 6 Texas A&M on September 4th, and a 37 loss at then number 5 Iowa last Saturday. The win is a 60-10 smashing of VMI on September 11th. The public is pretty heavily on the Terps. Terps should win this game. The question is by how much. Now, looming for Maryland is a huge game against number 5 Iowa in College Park next Friday night, October 1st. You would hope that there's no look ahead for the Terps or anything like that. I'd like to think that there will not be a look ahead. And so give me Maryland -14.5.
Make money, money, make money, money, money.
Yes, thank you, Snoop. Goldilocks game number 2, a big game for Wahoo, Virginia, home to Wake Forest, Friday night at 7. The Cavaliers are -3.5. Cavs fell to 2-1 with a 59-39 loss at then number 21 North Carolina last Saturday night. This game was nuts. Cavs and Tar Heels combined for 98 points and 1,273 net yards of offense. The Wahoos defense was atrocious. I mean, the Hoos allowed North Carolina to generate 699 total net yards of offense. Hoos allowed Carolina to average 10.3 yards per play. The Hoos did not force a single punt. The Hoos got carved up by North Carolina quarterback Sam Howell, who went 14-21 for 307 yards, 5 touchdowns, and an interception. The Hoos totaled just 1 sack, and the Hoos allowed Howell to have 15 carries for 112 yards. Look, a Virginia secondary that last season was bad, but so far this season had been okay, was back to looking bad last Saturday night. And the shame of the game was that an all-time performance by Cavs quarterback Brennan Armstrong was wasted. Armstrong was outstanding for a second consecutive game, 39 of 54 for 554 yards, 4 touchdowns, and an interception. He took 3 sacks, but the 554 passing yards are a single-game Virginia record and are the most ever by a quarterback against North Carolina. And Armstrong became the first quarterback in Virginia history to pass for at least 300 yards in each of 3 consecutive games. He's been really good so far this season. Wake Forest is 3-0. All 3 games have been home games. Back-to-back routes of Old Dominion at Norfolk State, followed by a 35-14 win over Florida State last Saturday afternoon. Public money is about even for this game. The line for the game has held pretty steady. Virginia was -4, then moved to -3.5. The question is what to make of Virginia's defense. You cannot unsee what we saw at North Carolina last Saturday night. But A, Brennan Armstrong is playing really well right now. And B, Virginia at home under Bronco Mendenhall is much different than Virginia on the road under Bronco Mendenhall. The Hoos with Bronco as head coach are just 8-23 in games away from Scott Stadium. Well, this game is happening at Scott Stadium. And so gimme Virginia, -3.5.
Make money, money, make money, money, money.
And Goldilocks, game number 3, Navy at Houston, Saturday night at 7. The Midshipmen are +19. This is the Mids AAC opener. Navy did not play last weekend, and that was a good thing. The Mids needed to collect their breath. The Mids fell to 0-2 with a 23-3 loss to Air Force at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium in Annapolis on September 11th. We then had the Ivan Jasper controversy. Navy, after the game, fired assistant head coach, offensive coordinator, and quarterbacks coach Ivan Jasper. But then head coach Ken Niumatalolo, in an online press conference the following Monday, announced that Jasper had been rehired as quarterbacks coach. What happened was that Jasper was fired by Navy Director of Athletics Chet Gladchuk, but Niumatalolo then asked Gladchuk to reconsider. Navy has looked really bad so far. Began its season with a 49-7 loss to Marshall in Annapolis on September 4th. Navy's offense has been terrible. There's instability at quarterback, just all kinds of issues. Houston is 2-1. Began its season with a 38-21 loss to Texas Tech at NRG Stadium in Houston. But the Cougars have since had a 44-7 win at Rice and a 45-0 shutout of Grambling. Houston through week 3 was number 28 in the FBS in defensive efficiency per ESPN. The public is overwhelmingly on Houston. I would love to talk myself into taking Navy, and maybe Navy starts to get its act together with this game, but I gotta see that before I can believe that. Gimme Houston, -19.
Make money, money, make money, money, money.
All right, so to review, Maryland, -14.5. Virginia, -3.5. Houston, -19. A lot of chalk this week, but that's okay. I went with 3 anti-public plays last week. And so there you go, your Goldilocks for college football, week 4. Well, believe it or not, the Capitals on Thursday conducted their first practice of training camp. The NHL season is the longest season of the seasons that are put forth by the big 4 pro sports leagues in this country. The NHL season begins in October, ends in June. The Caps preseason opener is this Sunday evening against the Boston Bruins at Capital One Arena at 5. The Caps regular season opener is on October 13th against the New York Rangers at Capital One Arena. Now, there was news with the Caps on Thursday, And the news isn't good. The Caps on Thursday announced that Nicklas Backstrom would miss the start of training camp due to ongoing rehabilitation on his hip. He is listed as week to week. So this coming season will be Backstrom's age 34 season. The Caps in January 2020 re-signed Backstrom to a five-year, $46 million contract extension. Now, Backstrom dealing with the hip could open the door for Connor McMichael to begin the regular season at the NHL level. The Caps took McMichael with the number 25 pick in the first round of the 2019 NHL draft. McMichael is a center. He, in the 2020-2021 AHL regular season, led the Caps AHL affiliate, the Hershey Bears, with 13 goals and 27 points. But with Backstrom, so he underwent hip surgery in May 2015. Senior Vice President and General Manager Brian McClellan on Thursday in a press conference with reporters said that what Backstrom is dealing with now is related to that surgery that Backstrom underwent in May 2015, that Backstrom has accumulated wear and tear on the hip. Backstrom is still a very good player, but he is an older player. And this is where the Caps now are. They're still a good team, but they are an older team, and they have multiple key guys coming off of stuff. Defenseman John Carlson on Thursday said that he chipped and or cracked a piece of his kneecap last season, got the situation surgically addressed, although he also said that he expects to be a full go for any preseason games. TJ Oshie on Thursday said that a soft tissue injury that nagged him late last season took a little longer to heal than he had hoped, but he said that he is now good to go. The Caps are an older team, and their team coming off three consecutive first-round exits in the Stanley Cup playoffs since winning the Stanley Cup in 2018. This is a tricky spot that the Caps are in. Still good enough to make postseasons, but not good enough, at least not in each of the last three postseasons, to do anything in these postseasons. But that's the thing with the NHL. All you have to do is make the postseason, and you're automatically a Stanley Cup contender because the Stanley Cup playoffs are incredibly flukish and are so much about which goaltenders are hot and so often feature upsets in terms of seeding. So as long as you can just get into the Stanley Cup playoffs, you have a shot at the Stanley Cup, and the Caps still are good enough to make the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Caps did not do much this past offseason in terms of additions due to being up against the salary cap, although the Caps did re-sign the greatest player in the history of the franchise. So there was that, right? The Caps on July 27th, the day before the start of NHL free agency, announced the re-signing of unrestricted free agent-to-be Alex Ovechkin to a five-year, $47.5 million contract. The Caps did lose two key defensemen from last season. The Caps on July 26th traded defenseman Brendan Dillon to the Winnipeg Jets for two second-round picks, a second-round pick in the 2022 NHL draft and a second-round pick in the 2023 NHL draft. And the Caps did lose unrestricted free agent defenseman Zdeno Chara. He spent last season with the Caps, ended up playing a lot. Chara signed a one-year contract with the New York Islanders in a deal that was announced last Saturday. This coming season, by the way, will be Chara's age 44 season. Caps still have the same top two goaltenders that the team had last season, Ilya Samsonov and Vitek Vanacek, although it was an eventful offseason for Vanacek. The Caps on July 21st lost Vanacek in the expansion draft for the Seattle Kraken, but the Caps on July 28th announced having traded a second-round pick in the 2023 NHL draft to the Kraken for Vanacek. So the Caps lost Vanacek to the Kraken in the expansion draft and then got back Vanacek a week later via a trade with the Kraken. And the second-round pick that the Caps sent to the Kraken for Vanacek, that was a second-round pick that was acquired by the Caps from the Jets in the Brendan Dillon trade. So that was a nice job of wheeling and dealing by Brian McClellan. Also, Caps on August 9th announced the re-signing of Samsonov. He was a restricted free agent, got a one-year, $2 million contract. This coming season is a very big season for Ilya Samsonov. He only got a one-year contract as a restricted free agent. That, to me, says a lot. The Caps want to see more before they commit to Ilya Samsonov. He needs to step up big time. Caps took Samsonov with the number 22 pick in the 2015 NHL draft. He has been a very mixed player for the Caps, and he has caused one headache after another for the Caps. There's been a lot of stuff to deal with Ilya Samsonov. Speaking of stuff to deal with, Evgeny Kuznetsov is still on the Caps. The Caps this past offseason did not trade old Kuzi. He's coming off back-to-back sketchy seasons. Kuznetsov this past season played in just 41 of the Caps' 56 regular season games and in just 3 of the Caps' 5 games in the Caps' 5-game first-round series loss to the Boston Bruins in the 2021 Stanley Cup playoffs. All of the missed time was related to non-injury situations. So he had 2 bouts with COVID-19. The first bout was part of the controversy that led to the NHL this past January 20th fining the Caps $100,000 for player violations of the league's COVID-19 protocols. Kuznetsov's second bout with COVID-19 came off him and Samsonov having been suspended for a game by the team for being late to a team function. As you may recall, Kuznetsov also served a 3-game suspension without pay at the start of the 2019-2020 regular season for inappropriate conduct, which we know was cocaine use. Kuzi is talented. Nobody has ever denied that. He can be insanely productive. Nobody denies that. But he also can disappear, and he's got to get his act together and produce the way we know that he can produce. This coming season will only be Kuznetsov's age 29 season. He's still not even in his 30s, but he's got to be available, okay? He's got to stop getting suspended. He's got to stop getting COVID. I mean, the guy's had COVID-19 twice. I mean, is he going for like the COVID hat trick? Okay, like enough is enough here with old Kuzi getting COVID. And the guy's got to deliver. You know, he's got a fat contract too. Caps in July 2017 signed Kuznetsov to an 8-year, $62.4 million contract. Now, I do have to say this. There is a charm to Evgeny Kuznetsov that makes it really hard not to like the guy. Okay, first of all, he has the bird celebration, the bird celly that he does, which I love to see. But the guy also has a sense of humor that's pretty endearing. Take a listen to this. This is how Evgeny Kuznetsov's press conference on Thursday started.
How's the summer, man?
Great.
You going to Russia?
No. I got the green card, you know. I'm good. I can speak now. They can't send me home anymore, you know. Even if they do, I can always come back. You know? Yeah. Okay, fun time is over. Now real questions, right?
All right. Now that's funny. All right. That's funny. How do you not like that? How do you not laugh at that? Okay. I cracked up when I saw that from Kuzi on Thursday. You could see why people like to party with Evgeny Kuznetsov. Well, speaking of laughing, or at least smiling, Kuzi later in his press conference said the following.
The goal is for me to get my smile back in the game, you know? And if I don't smile in the game, that means something bad, right? We don't play good. And for me, it was always important to see guys happy, to see smile during the game. Even if you lose the game, you come back in the locker room, you see it, it was like, man, we did everything we could, right? We try, it just didn't go our way. You know, we come back next day, we're happy, we work. But, you know, when you're always in negative mood, when you're not happy, it doesn't make you better. It's not easy for you to compete.
Well, good for Kuzi. I hope that Kuznetsov is smiling this season. I hope that he doesn't get COVID again, okay? I hope that he does not complete the COVID hattie. And I hope, like heck, that we see the Evgeny Kuznetsov who we saw in the 2018 Stanley Cup playoffs. Never forget, while it was Alex Ovechkin who won the Conn Smythe Trophy as postseason MVP in 2018, it was Kuznetsov who that postseason led the Caps with 32 points, a franchise record for a single postseason. I was never on board with just giving Kuznetsov away this past offseason. If you were going to trade him and get back great value, fine. But otherwise, the guy is too gifted to just give away. And especially when you consider you would have been trading him away at a pretty low value point. If nothing else, let him rehab his value with a strong season this coming season. The guy is too talented to keep being as he has been over these last few years. Well, it's not quite the battle that the San Francisco Giants and Los Angeles Dodgers are having for the National League West title, but the Orioles and Arizona Diamondbacks are tied for the worst record in the majors, each team at 49 and 104 as of games through Thursday. Who will step up or step down the most over the final week plus of the MLB regular season to secure that number one pick in the 2022 MLB draft. Who will tank the best over the final week plus of the regular season to secure that number one pick in the 2022 MLB draft? We shall see. But actually, we had a nice win for the O's on Thursday night. A 3-0 win over the Texas Rangers at Oriole Park at Camden Yards in game one of a four-game series. Now, the Rangers are really bad, but the O's are worse. So no apologies are necessary. And so, Joe Angel, if you would.
And the Orioles again in the win column.
Yes, Joe. This Orioles win on Thursday night, another game in which Austin Hayes delivered. What a run this guy is on. He was the Orioles starting left fielder and number three batter. Went 2-for-4 with a solo homer and a single. Hayes in the bottom of the first had a two-out full count single despite having been down to the count of 1.12. Hayes in the bottom of the eighth had a one-out solo homer to left field. The homer going a projected 412 feet. For StatCast. So Austin Hayes now this season has 22 homers and has raised his OPS for the season by 92 points since the start of games on August 25th. His OPS for the season has gone from 687 to 779 since the start of games on August 25th. He has been arguably the Orioles' best hitter over the last month, and that's saying something because Cedric Mullins, the Orioles center fielder, has continued to do well, and Ryan Mountcastle has continued to do well, and he did well again in this 3-0 win over the Rangers at Camden Yards on Thursday night. Ryan Mountcastle continues his candidacy for American League Rookie of the Year. Mountcastle as the Orioles starting first baseman and number two batter on Thursday night, 2-for-4 with a solo homer and a single. Mountcastle in the bottom of the third had a two-out single on an 0-2 pitch, and Mountcastle in the bottom of the fifth, a two-out opposite field solo homer to right field. The homer going a projected 412 feet for StatCast. Mountcastle now has 31 home runs this season, and he has a slugging percentage of .496. This season. And then a third positive for the O's on Thursday night was their starting pitching. You know, this win on Thursday night for the Orioles was a second win in four games, but each win in that stretch, a shutout victory, believe it or not. I mean, the Orioles pitching this season has been atrocious, but you now have each of the last two Orioles wins, shutout wins. But the Orioles starting pitcher on Thursday night was lefty Zach Lowther, and he was quite good. Lowther on Thursday night, 5 scoreless innings with 7 strikeouts. He gave up just 3 hits, all of which were singles. He issued 2 walks and a wild pitch. Now, he did throw 94 pitches over the 5 innings, but, you know, anything that's good from any of these young Orioles pitchers, you take with how this season has gone. Lowther is a guy who the O's recalled from AAA Norfolk on September 6th. He had pitched for the O's previously at the major league level this season. Lowther was taken by the O's in the second round of the 2017 MLB draft out of Xavier. But, you know, Lowther is one of many Orioles pitchers who has gotten shellacked at times this season. Lowther in a 22-7 loss to the Toronto Blue Jays at Oriole Park at Camden Yards on September 12th allowed 7 runs in 2 innings, but a nice job by Lowther against the Rangers on Thursday night. Game 2 for the O's against the Rangers at Camden Yards Friday night at 7:05. All right, my friends, that will do it for you and me, but just for now, keep the feedback coming. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Monday show, episode 153. Will be a jam-packed show. It may be a 2-hour show. Who the heck knows? It will be a Washington football team postgame show. I do know that, off whatever happens in Washington's game at the Buffalo Bills. But I also will discuss the college football weekend and what goes down for Maryland, Virginia Navy, and Virginia Tech. I will get into whatever incredible things Juan Soto does for the Nationals at the Cincinnati Reds. And I'll talk Orioles as well. And you know what? Maybe something big happens at Capitals training camp. You never know. Evgeny Kuznetsov is still on the team. Have a great weekend. Hail to the Burgundy and the Gold. And I'll talk to you on Monday.
How's summer, man?
Great.
You going to Russia or
no, you no, no, I got the green card, you know. I'm good. I can speak now. They can't send me home anymore, you know. Even if they do, I can always come back. You know? Yeah. Okay, fun time is over. Now real questions, right?